days, and you know, anybody who's a parent knows, you know, how special that is. So he was home in the fall, and he happened to mention, because we were watching football in the fall, and the 49ers were on, and they came out to try a field goal try, and he said, "Jake Moody." I said, "Yeah." And he said, I had dinner with Jake a couple of weeks ago. And I went, "What?" And he said, "Yeah, my buddy, what his buddy's name was." He said, "And they all went to Michigan to some lake, and they were hanging out." And he said, "And his buddy from high school is good buddies with Jake Moody, who's from Michigan." And he said, "So Jake joined us for dinner, and there were four of us. We had dinner. He's a really good guy." I thought, oh, that's awesome, because, yeah, he was really nice.
Small world.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So we're sitting there last night, and Jake Moody lines up to kick a field goal for the 49ers, and he misses a long field goal try. He missed a 58-yarder.
Yeah, boy.
And my son is like, "Oh, Jake, ooh." Because, you know, now we're rooting for the guy.
Of course.
We have a rooting interest, right?
Yeah.
And he's had a rough year. As if you've paid any attention, he's had a real rough year. And remember, they drafted him in the third round. He had a real rough year. And so then later on in the game, he missed a 51-yard field goal try. And that, you know, so that wasn't good. So he's missed two. And then later in the game, he missed an extra point. And it's like, oh, man. Here's this poor kid. And all of a sudden, you know, he's not my son's buddy, but my son knows the guy.
They're friendly, yeah.
And we're rooting for him. And he misses two field goals and an extra point. And I said, "Andrew, he's going to end up being, he's going to get cut, or at least get competition, right? That's what's going to have to happen there." So there's that. The 49ers used a third-round pick on him. Third-round pick on a kicker. A good organization like the 49ers. John Lynch used a third-round pick on a kicker. And I thought, that's not good. And there were actually three kickers taken in that draft. And it was the 2023 draft. The others, Chad Ryland, Anders Carlson, have already been on multiple NFL teams.
Mm-hmm.
And they were both drafted, three kickers. And I thought, well, there's poor Cade York trying to stick with Cincinnati. And what happened to poor Cade? They call a timeout and bring him in to kick the game winner last week on Thursday. What was it? Thursday Night Football, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he hit it off the upright from 22 yards away to hit the game winner. And he missed it. And the Bengals ended up winning in overtime, much to the delight of my fantasy team that started Joe Burrow and T. Higgins.
Because nobody cares.
They had the game-winning touchdown. But Cade York, who was drafted, misses. Cade was the fourth-round pick of the Browns in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you just don't draft a kicker. That's been
Agreed.
The motto of our show.
Yep.
You don't draft a kicker. There have been
Don't draft kicker.
There yep. have been kickers taken in the first round.
Oh, yeah. Sebastian Janikowski.
He's the only one who you could actually say, you know what, that paid off.
Yeah.
There have been others. Little from Arkansas. There have been a couple of others. It hasn't worked. Sebastian Janikowski, that worked.
But even that, I still wouldn't have drafted him in the first round.
Right. Why? Because you can get a good one elsewhere.
He's a kicker.
And I thought, you know, for sake of fun and to show why you don't draft a kicker.
Well, you and I have different definitions of fun.
Like Brandon Aubrey in Dallas is stunningly good. He'd never kicked before. Jake Bates, Detroit. Pretty darn good. He had kicked, from what I read, before he kicked in the UFL, he had kicked one field goal in his life. In a game. One. He was a kickoff specialist in college.
Goodness.
And then he goes to the UFL, he refines it, becomes a kicker, and he's pretty good in Detroit right now. And I thought, I wonder, you know, who the Browns passed up to take Cade York. This isn't about the Browns passing up guys. It's about why you don't draft kickers. But I thought this would be fun. You ready, Dan? There's the window. You can put your head through it.
Oh, boy, do
I. And I only looked at skill position guys on offense because I think our team lacks in skill position, and it lacks in depth at the skill positions. And I thought, I wonder who they could have had.
Anthony, put this on YouTube and label it Fat Man Fall Down Go Boom.
Had, who are you talking about?
Me, about to jump out this window.
That's not very nice. Who could they have at skill positions if they had taken them instead of Cade York in the fourth round of the 2022 draft?
Oh, I love revisionist history. Everyone wins this game.
I'm just saying, this is why you don't draft a kicker.
Oh, happy
you just
day.
Go get one. Okay, Cade York's on his, what, third, fourth team?
You know what? Get this
out. Had him.
Just add this in 2024 so we could start fresh in 25.
You want some help for David Njoku? You could have drafted, and these guys were all drafted after the Browns took Cade York in the fourth round of the 2022 draft.
Joyous day.
My skill position could have been, I'm calling it, you ready? The
sure.
All taken after Cade York in the 2022 draft team. At tight end, you could have had Pro Bowler Jake Ferguson of the Dallas Cowboys. Now, he's been injured this year a little bit, but last year, 71 catches, 761 yards, 5 touchdowns, went to the Pro Bowl. And if you don't like him, you could have Isaiah Likely of the Baltimore Ravens.
It's been a good pickup.
At wide receiver, could have had Romeo Doubs.
What a wonderful revisionist history.
Of your Green Bay Packers. He's had 3 productive seasons in the National Football League.
It's a good receiver.
You could have Calvin Austin, little spark plug of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Boy, do I feel great about this list.
Who this year has 36 catches, 548 yards, 4 touchdowns. You could have had wide receiver Khalil Shakir of the Buffalo Bills, who is becoming a real weapon for Josh Allen.
I hope everybody's writing this list down so they can read it at the end of the night when they want people to leave their New Year's party.
76 catches, 821 yards, 4 touchdowns for Khalil Shakir. Browns could have had him, but they took Cade York. Or if as my extra wide receiver.
Oh, good. I'm glad you got somebody to bring off the bench.
You could have yet another DTR high school teammate, Jalen Naylor of the Minnesota Vikings.
Well, why wouldn't you?
25 catches, 361, 6 touchdowns, while playing in the same offense as Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison. Yet he still has 6 touchdown catches this year.
And this revisionist history is just that.
I'm just telling you who they could have had and why you don't draft a kicker. Now you're really going to get near that window and just bash your head right through it. It's really thick glass. It might take a while.
Do you have the caption ready, Anthony?
At running back. And I think the Browns could use a running back, couldn't they?
Sure.
Isaiah Pacheco of the Kansas City Chiefs, who has 2 Super Bowl rings in his first 2 years. He's been injured this year.
You know.
Or you're really ready to throw your head through the window?
This list brought to you by Rolaids.
Kyren Williams of the Los Angeles Rams. Last year, over 1,100 yards and 12 touchdowns. This year, over 1,200 yards and 14 touchdowns. Taken after the Browns took Cade York, kicker, in the fourth round of the 2022 draft.
You know, that sad nap is really going to be earned today.
You want to throw somebody else in, you could have Tyler Allgeier of the Atlanta Falcons. He's a pretty good running back.
Well, I mean, you know, I guess I could be choosy to this list.
You had Kyren Williams and Isaiah Pacheco.
Yeah.
You took a kicker. And what's the Browns' biggest need?
Quarterback.
Hey! You could have taken Brock Purdy.
That's great.
Now, nobody else did.
That's great.
Nobody else did until the last pick of the draft.
Oh, boy.
Well, you thought it was probably better to take a kicker than to take a quarterback who might be able to play in the league.
Aye.
You ready? I'll make it even more hideous for you. You could have drafted Sam Howell, who right now is a backup in Seattle.
I gotta lay down.
But last year, and you know, Sam's a work in progress. Does he become anything? I don't know. But last year, he led the NFL in pass attempts with 621. He also led the NFL with 21 interceptions, but he had 21 touchdowns and almost 4,000 yards passing. You could have drafted him and worked with him because Kevin Stefanski could work with quarterbacks, but you took a kicker in the fourth round.
So,
how's your head?
Bad. Kind of feels like somebody bashed it up against the window about 3 times.
Anthony, how's your head? You okay?
13 picks later, you could have taken Bailey Zappi and skipped all the middlemen.
Why are you sucking up to him? Why are you taking his side? What did that prove? What did you gain from that?
I didn't even go deep on these because I left Bailey Zappe off because I didn't think he was even worthy of being mentioned. But as long as Anthony's going to do it, yeah, you could have taken Bailey Zappe.
What did this gain you?
Three picks later, you could have taken Pierre Strong, selected by the New England Patriots.
Are we in a better place because of this?
He's bringing up guys who I like who didn't even make my all taken after Cade York in the 2022 draft team.
Who won with this? Like
Jake Ferguson won because he didn't end up with the Browns.
I feel
so did Romeo Doubs, Calvin Austin, Khalil Shakir, Kyren Williams, Isaiah Pacheco, Brock Purdy, Tyler Allgeier, and Sam Howell.
I feel like right now I went
and Jalen Naylor and Isaiah Likely.
Not only did I go and then kick the football and Lucy pulled it away, but then Pigpen decided to hit me with the elbow drop. Like that's what I feel like right now. Like this is ridiculous.
I'm not even going to ask Greg Williams why you shouldn't draft a kicker. I'm not going to do it.
Thank you. Save us, Greg.
But
you're our only hope.
I'm pulling for Jake Moody like crazy. And Cade York sat right here in this chair next to me back in his rookie year. He's a really nice kid. I hope he figures it out. Either way, he's dating a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader, so he's got that going for him.
That is a win.
It's not a bad thing.
That is a win.
So that works out okay. But don't draft a kicker. Can I even say, don't even financially commit to a kicker. One other thing, you want me to make it worse? Browns have drafted three kickers since 2017.
Our social media mentions powered by Scheiben Jewelers.
Zane Gonzalez, Austin Seibert.
Cleveland's premier jewelry
and
store.
And Cade York. Two of them drafted by John Dorsey.
Send us a message at CLE Talking Heads, like AJ does here. I would rather listen to funeral music over listening to this list. Please, Lord, take me now.
Greg Williams, former defensive coordinator extraordinaire.
AJ, you're good people.
Super Bowl champ with the Saints.
Feel the same way.
It's coming up next on Baskin and Phillips with Menigan, despite the fact that his head hurts.
I want to go take a walk through a garden so I can see light again.
Thrilled to go to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. If you want the truth, you talk to this guy about anything with the NFL. He's former Browns defensive coordinator. Browns interim coach. Guy did a great job when he was the head coach of the Browns. Mr. Greg Williams joining us. Hello, Greg.
Hello, coach.
Hello, Jeff, Dan. Thank you for inviting me on. It makes me smile when I hear your introduction, and I'm glad that you go ahead and preface this by, you guys better not ask me a question that's going to hurt your feelings, because I'm going to answer it honestly.
That's a valid point.
I'm not going to ask you anything about me, so I don't think you can hurt my feelings, so that's good.
Greg, no, it's great.
Your career, you've been in football so long, you've had seasons that haven't gone well. What happens when a season goes south like this? And then what are the folks who are standing after the season do to fix it?
You know, and that's the great questions, and the fans need to hear this too, is that when things go this way, and I look back, and I've had a few, not very many, a few of the seasons that have gone that direction, and I believe with all my heart it's some of the best coaching jobs and learning experience I ever did to get the guys through it, and everybody would see the next year of the amazing improvements and stuff. We learn by everything. We learn by success. We learn by failure. And if you're and the people involved are too stupid to figure that out, then you're going to continue to have down seasons, down games, down falls like that. And, you know, and I think the players, and again, I've coached, you know, up around 2,500 NFL players throughout all these years, they could tell, you know, that the seriousness and then the more recruiting anger, the more recruiting crankiness that I had on getting them ready to go the next time. But, you know, the things that we see going on and everything, and I say this before you ask this question later on, the thing that pisses me off the most when I watch college games and NFL games are pre-snap penalties, and that's coaching. And the reason it's coaching, you're allowing it to happen. And that every day in practice, those kind of experiences have to make sure that they're being thought out so that doesn't happen in a game, because you don't penalize your team before the ball's even snapped? Are you kidding me? That kind of stuff right there has to be done in a manner that the players understand, hey, this is our responsibility to make sure that now we can go after yards, go after the ball, go after blades of grass, score points, defend points, all that kind of stuff. But pre-snap penalties, it makes me vomit.
So, Coach, we're running into that all over the place here. I mean, there's this great one where a young player hopped offsides on the one-yard line and basically started a drive for Joe Burrow and that stuff. When that stuff takes place, Coach, is that coaching or is that just players being overly aggressive? We'll say make it sound like that.
It's a combination of both. And then now here's what I need to ask you right now. Do you know if that player stayed in the game and played the next play?
Oh, goodness. I got to go back and look. I don't know.
I will tell you this. With me, it ain't going to happen. Decide who plays and who don't play. And when you do stupid things like that, you come stand by me. And if it continues to happen, the players will tell you right now, you talk to any of them, he's going to send you up to sell beer in the stands. Yeah, the next time I'm going to say, go sell beer in the stands. You're done. You're done. You cannot have that on the 1 yard line.
It was on the 1 yard line with Joe Burrow with the ball.
And when people say that's just the player wanting to be aggressive because they want to make it positive in his mind, it's not positive in his mind. It's stupid in his mind. You can't win that way.
Greg Williams joining us. The Browns sitting here at 3-13. If you look at this crew and think, this is the thing it needs first and foremost without question, is it quarterback, Greg, or is it something else?
I'll tell you right now, and I think that, you know, I think Kevin and Andrew and the people behind the scenes have done things the last 2 years that have improved spots on the roster pretty well, okay? They've done a good job with that. But the quarterback position has not played correctly. It is not. And again, I go back and say this, you know, when I took over in those last 8 games of the year, and I wasn't going to do that, but the players, you know, sprinted up to my office and talked me into going back down the hallway when they offered me the job to say, okay, I'll do this. But then I had some things, requirements that ownership, general manager, everybody had to do for us to do this. Okay. We were dead last in the league, giving up 38 sacks and 41 hits on the quarterback. And the first day that I took over, and again, I played quarterback, and I was an offensive coordinator for 10 years, and I changed everything we did offensively. I went through Bob Wiley and Ken Zampezi and Freddie and everything and narrowed the 26 pass protections down to 6, and Baker went off. Baker went nutbag, like, how am I going to do this? How am I going to do this? And I grabbed him by the collar and pulled him within an inch of my nose, and I said, you want to know how you do this? Get rid of the ball. You're holding the ball too long. And, you know, do you think that those offensive linemen have eyeballs in their buttholes? They have no idea with how you're moving around in the pocket and giving up sacks because you're holding it and your plant foot is deeper than 7.5 yards. Sometimes it's 9.5, 10.5, 11.5, and I don't care. Old Greg Williams can get out there and speed rush and get to you on that. I'm going to put a siren in practice, and every time that you hold the ball 2.5 seconds or longer, a siren's going off. And you know what? That siren's going to keep going off because you're going to prison, because everybody on the team is going to prison because Baker's not holding the ball. I watch him play right now. I'm so proud of him. He goes, we go the next 8 weeks and give up 2 sacks and 7 hits on the quarterback. We were number one in the league in protecting the quarterback with the same offensive line that everybody says sucked. They don't suck. That's part of the quarterback. Where did I learn that? I learned that going against Tom Brady, coaching against Peyton Manning, coaching against Drew Brees, Joe Montana, all those guys. They made their offensive line better. The quarterback play has not been very solid at all, okay, at the Browns right now. And when that gets fixed, watch how much better they get and watch how they keep the games closer. Because Jim Schwartz understands that too. He's been with me. He totally understands all those factors on winning a game. Fix the quarterback and watch the improvement.
Former Browns coach Greg Williams joining us. You can see him on Big Play. Come get some with he and Blake. A great watch always. And, of course, former Browns coach, defensive coordinator, interim head coach. Won a Super Bowl with the Saints as well. Joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. All right, Coach, the Browns are talking that they're going to play DTR and Bailey Zappe this week. What do you think when you hear a team going, well, here's the third string and fourth string quarterback. Let's hope for the best.
You know, I can't explain and keep the language serviceable for your radio station.
But thank you for that, Greg. Thank you.
Yeah. Because, you know, I don't want it to go beep, 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 beep. Is that kind of stuff, you know, I just shake my head. You know, how you're going to end the season? There's a way right now to make ending the season feel like I can't wait to get back and start working. But if it continues to be the same old BS, that's not, okay? That's not how we go about finishing it. And then again, you know, you're playing the Baltimore Ravens. And John Harbaugh and I go way back, and I love that family to death. And I tell John and Jim all the time, I still talk to Jim a lot. I talk to John too, but I talk to Jim a lot. And I said, if the good thing that you had a mom and dad to understand, okay, the seriousness of how you go about doing things when you're coaching other people, it's going to be a tough game here. I mean, they're an extremely physical team. And, you know, these players need to feel good about going into the offseason, okay? And if those two cats are going to play at the quarterback position, then everything that the game plan's about is protecting them with running the ball, play action protection. If it goes to five or six man protections, then you have a shock collar on his testicles that if he holds the ball longer than 2.5 seconds, shock him. Okay? Because that's the only way you're going to be successful against a dominant Baltimore Ravens defense in this last week.
Greg Williams joining us. You had Myles Garrett in his rookie year. Myles Garrett has been vocal the last couple of weeks. I want to know what's going on. I want to win. I want to know what's going on here. If you're the Browns, what do you tell Myles Garrett? And if you're Myles Garrett, what do you want to hear?
You know, when I saw that come out there, you know, obviously I still communicate with all those guys. You know, I don't know if you guys saw me at that preseason game when David Njoku come sprinting over acting like he was going to light me up and tackle me. I thought he was going to blow me up, and he stopped about 1 inch from my chest with his helmet. And I still talk to all those guys, and it made me smile when I saw Miles say that. And because Miles has a voice, and you know, and I was very hard on him when he came in, because everybody has to see how you treat the best player in the room. Because when you sugarcoat things to the best player in the room, then everybody else thinks they're going to get sugarcoated and they're not going to perform and play up to their standards. And every single day you got to hold guys to the standards, myself first, the coach, and then the players, and then there's a great relationship that way. I think that is a very important thing to Miles now as he's entering his career. I can't tell you how proud I am of him, you know, and I tell you that all the time where if I didn't, you know, put my foot down, they were going to draft Mitch Trubisky instead of drafting Myles Garrett that day. And then what he's been able to do with that. And it's not anymore just about those records to Miles. It's about winning the championship. It's about bringing that trophy to Cleveland. It's about doing those things for the fan base and for the city, you know, and I'm very happy that he's involved, you know, in ownership at the Cavs. And then now let's see yourself, Miles, continue to motivate, improve, and be a sounding board for those young guys when they need it. I think they got to do a very good job and have a very organized plan and present it to him and everybody there. And then boom, get off on the right foot when everybody gets energized again, hit the ground running on day one in the offseason program and build to a championship.
All right, so I got to ask you, Coach, because you brought up the Harbaugh family a little bit earlier. What makes Jim so successful? You know, he just blows me away everywhere he goes, Coach.
Yep. You know, first off is that, again, there's a big poster, not a poster, but a big hanging, wall hanging when you walk in the door of every meeting room that I've had for 40 years in the NFL. And the very first thing in great big print with the colors of the team, you know, brown and orange, you know, for the Browns, it says check your ego at the door. And boom, you have to be able to check your ego at the door. And the players need to see me do that. And when they see me do that, then by gosh, they can do that. Jim, as a successful player, as a successful coach, every single second of every day, he checks his ego and relates to the players and understands when he's saying things, even in sometimes an ass-chewing way, he's doing it to make everybody better, himself better. He provides an example. And when you provide an example first that someone can see, then it's amazing how much better they listen to you and they feel what you're saying in those types of ways. I think Jim communicates so well. We stay very close. You know, we just had a conversation here a couple of days ago, and we stay very close with a lot of things that's going on. We've had some knockdown, drag-out fist fights, coaching against each other. And in those battles, my respect for him grows as his respect for me grows. And then when we actually do talk to each other, we listen and feel each other when we're doing that. The players do a great job with that. And I'm telling you what a fantastic job he's done with Justin Herbert. What an unbelievable job. And how he went in there from day one and set the parameters and set the voice out there about how proud he was to have the opportunity to help him get better. By gosh, he did, didn't he?
And pumped that dude up every turn.
Yeah, yep. Herbert's been really good.
Pumped him up every turn, every single press conference. He's out there going, man, if there's an I hope that this guy quarterbacks for the rest of my career. He's been wonderful. I mean, good golly, the positivity that goes into that guy, and you see it on the field, Coach. It blows me away.
You see it on the field, and all Justin's heard his whole life is, you know, he had a 5.0 at grade points, never made a B in his life. He's a straight-A student. He's brilliant. He's smart as all get out. And how do you go about getting that person to want to please you? Do you think that now Justin wants to please Jim and all of his teammates? And then also, behind the scenes, when nobody sees it, Jim does do a very good job correcting him in a real stern way, so the rest of the teammates see him be stern at times with Justin, too. I'm very proud of him, and I'm really looking forward to those guys continue to do it. I don't think people's talking enough about how good Greg Roman's doing as the offensive coordinator and how Jesse Minter is doing at the defensive coordinator. I'm real proud of young Jesse and what he's been able to do, too.
Greg, last thought, and Greg Williams joining us. If you're the Browns, you're sitting here, Deshaun Watson's contract is probably unmanageable. He's going to be here next year. Jameis is here now. You've got Zappe. You've got DTR. Would you bring back one of these guys? Would you try and sign a veteran who might have a year or three left, something like that? Would you go for a young veteran? Would you go for a rookie in the draft? How would you tackle the quarterback spot next year?
I'd go for a veteran, and every day is a competition. I would make sure that we had a quarterback that we could win with, and we would do it in a way that every day is a competition, and it's not just with the guard. It's not just with the DBs. It's not just with the wide receivers. It's with the quarterback every day. And when things are that way and you're not anointed or just given a position, that what now, because I'm paying you so much, now we have to let you play. No. Every day is an interview, me to you, you to me. And that interview better be making sure that you're the first one in the office, the last one out. You're the first one on the practice field, the last one off, and that you are performing and doing your things in a preparation way, in a preparatory way, that you're going to win championships. If not, adios. Go sell beer.
Greg, thank you very much. Always appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, Coach, and a very happy holidays to you, your family, and everything else, man.
Thank thank you very much. You guys have a merry, merry, merry 2025, and I appreciate you having tough enough resilience to ask me dumb questions, and I'll answer them.
we can make them dumber. We're
good at dumb questions.
Lord knows I've got dumber thoughts than these.
No, I appreciate your friendship. Have a great year.
All right, Greg. Appreciate it. Greg Williams, former head coach of the Browns, former head coach of the Buffalo Bills.
Well, we ended up three times. That's pretty good.
Joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. And then he didn't get the job, which would have been an experience. How many times did you hit the dump button? Only three?
I only had three on this.
That's
one.
That's really good.
Yeah.
You're touchy on the dump button.
A little more than I should
be. You're a little over the top. Honestly, you only needed to dump one thing, I think. But you were being extra safe, so that's okay.
They were good one-liners, I must admit.
Oh, they were terrific.
Our social media mention is powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. You can always send a message to the show at CLE Talking Heads. Robert in Brecksville wants to know if we could start a GoFundMe to have a GoFundMe to pay the FCC fine to have unfiltered Greg Williams for 15 minutes.
Be a lot of money.
I mean, it's better than if we would pre-record these things and we just turn them into the Roadrunner.
It's interesting to me. Greg, of course, and Greg was an offensive coach, and he shared that with us, and was a quarterback when he played, and then became a defensive coordinator, which I've always thought is an interesting thing. You know, Kevin Stefanski's done the same thing. Went from a defense to an offensive coach, because who would, in one theory, you know, who would know an offense better than a guy who's trying to stop it? And then who would know a defense better than, my drift on
Kyle
that.
Kyle Shanahan's notorious for that, where he makes these guys all cross-learn everything.
Yeah, which has been great, isn't it? Yeah, it really is. But Greg said, get rid of the football. We saw that with Jameis Winston, because Jameis got rid of the ball a little bit more. Greg didn't like any of the quarterback play. But Jameis clearly made the offensive line better when he was in there, because he was getting rid of the ball a little bit more, not running all around. As Greg said, the offensive linemen don't have eyeballs, you know where. And so how do they know where you are behind them? And he got Baker to release the ball more quickly. It worked. And that's his key moving forward, right, for the quarterback. But I also thought that I thought it was very interesting that he said, because I asked him, Jameis, Zappy, DTR, Deshaun, rookie, a draft, veteran, whatever. He'd go veteran. He'd bring in a veteran quarterback and put him in this and go.
Well, but that's also, and we got to have this part of it too, that's also the coach side.
Coaches love veterans.
Coaches like vets. Mm-hmm. They trust vets. You know, there's a reason.
If you have the right vet.
Yeah. There is a reason why Greg Popovich is the perfect example, playing as veterans all the time, you know, and all the different coaches in between there. Coaches like veterans because you can put more on veterans' plate. You don't have to teach them. But with getting the ball out fast on top of it, you see it throughout the league. The quarterback who are able to deliver the ball quickly on time and on target, unless they're Lamar Jackson. And even he plays on time and on target as well with one of the best of them.
Hasn't he? He's just so grown as a quarterback. It's
ridiculous.
He's
turned into a great pocket passer.
He sure has.
And you could say the same thing with you know, a lot of people are thinking Jaden Daniels is going to find himself in that same way. He's got a lot to go to get to that level. Josh Allen has become a really good pocket passer, working on time, on target.
These guys know that eventually you can't continue to take those hits.
Right.
And put yourself in harm's way.
And that's the thing. It's kind of funny how all of this stuff comes back in vogue after a while, because we were in the realm where all these quarterbacks were kind of running around and making things happen. And now you're seeing in the NFL, Bo Nix, perfect example. Why? Sean Payton. What was the thing with the Sean Payton offense in New Orleans? On time, on target. 7 steps, ball out. 5 steps, ball out. It just makes life easier on everybody else when you play on time.
Greg not happy with the pre-snap stuff. I understand completely. He says that's on coaching. And I understand the aspect of it where he said, why is it on coaching? Because if it happens, you're out of the game. Mm-hmm. I mean,
couldn't remember if somebody could get to us if Diabate was pulled after.
What's gonna be the case with a player? What do players want to do? They want to play. And if you don't let them play, if they do this, then you would think that gets into their head and they figure that out. And if not, then they're not on your team anymore. I mean, it's pretty simple.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty...
In Greg's world. Which I agree with completely.
Well, and it makes sense. What he is saying makes sense, where it's like, if you do something that silly, you need to come over here and you need to think about what you've done. You know, as rudimentary as that statement sounds, mm-hmm. it's as truthful as it comes, no matter what walk of life you are. Every so often, when you goof something up, you need to come over here, and you got to sit down, and you got to think about what you've done and think about what we are going to do to make sure that that does not happen again. You know, I know people get grumpy with Myles Garrett trying to jump snap counts for that exact reason. You know, and especially on the 1 yard line. I mean, goodness, you've got him pinned back as much as you can, and it's Joe Burrow back there. Like, you can't give that guy a millimeter, let alone 5 yards. Like, it's just, that was the one that did me into. Like, that one just made my brain just hurt. Because it's like, buddy, I know you're trying to make a play. I get it. You're aggressive as it comes, and I appreciate that. But we can't do dumb things. You're killing us. All right.
That's where guys just need to be better. You know, I mean, I understand they're trying to be aggressive, all that stuff. You just have to be better. I found Greg's comments about Myles Garrett pretty interesting. Greg had Myles as a rookie. Obviously, he said he was hard on him. You got to be tough on the best player in the room. That's well said, I think, and he was on Myles. That's going to be something to watch in this offseason. I hope, Dan, I think you hope, we all hope, Myles Garrett's on this team next year. If Myles doesn't like what he sees as the direction of this moving forward, it does give the Browns an opportunity to try to better the team by moving on from, I think, your best player on the team. But I don't want to do that.
Yes.
I don't know. You can get better in doing that. I don't think that this is the situation where you want to do that in. He's so good. He's such a dominant force on the defensive line. And without him, I worry about the defense. I do. Without him, I worry about the defense.
If you and I were to sit down and do a non-quarterback draft, just take everybody else in the NFL besides quarterbacks and throw them all in a pot, and we did a draft, Myles Garrett would be one of the first 5 players taken.
Yeah, I was going to say easy top 10.
I don't want to live in a world where I'm trading one of the 5 best non-quarterbacks in football. I don't know how that makes you better. I'm sorry.
Like, the only way it makes you better is if he decides this doesn't work for me anymore. That's the only way. He's going to
have to come to me and say, you need to get me out of here. I'm not doing it voluntarily.
I'm not selling,
and I know it's first-round picks, but I'm sorry. I am not giving away Hall of Fame talent for a handful of magic beans that I hope can turn into a tangible asset that is 85% of Myles Garrett, 90% of Myles Garrett, if they're really good. I'm not doing it, Jeff. I'm sorry. I'm not living in that world. 1 Myles Garrett is worth more to me than a handful of magic beans.
I agree with that. And I hope that they can figure it all out and that he's back here next year. We're going to get some thoughts from one of the guys that we respect as much as anybody in our business. And he's not going to be in our business in the same capacity for a whole lot longer. We'll explain all that next because he's joining us on Baskin and Phelps.